Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Dr. Deborah.
Hi, it's Coach Kelly.
We're thrilled to be here again on this beautiful Southern California day. Oh, I feel so bad for the people all over the...
It's freezing everywhere else.
Absolutely freezing. Although I was talking to the car attendant downstairs when I was walking up, and if there was a very cool breeze going through the parking lot, he says, this is my Chicago windway.
We should but look at you. Let me describe what Dr. Deborah is wearing. Like a fleece, like, you know, coat in this, you know, 70 degree weather. So.
I know. It says it's 74, but I was chilly.
It was a little windy.
I know. We're so spoiled. So spoiled. Oh, my goodness. Even when I was in Santa Fe, brought the good weather to Santa Fe. It was in the... 60s
so
during
nice.
The day, and now it's in the 20s this week.
Oh my God.
So really,
well,
it changes.
I've become one of those who calls my East Coast friends, and I'm like, hey, how you doing out there in the cold? I'm in my, while I, you know, put on my tank top and my shorts and head out outside. I promised myself I would never do that. I can't help it. It's just like, you know, I got to bask in the glory a little bit of this nice weather.
I had a woman client come in today in shorts this morning and then a fleece top, like a down vest on top. This is only in California.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
But you've experienced both sides because you were in Maryland for a whole bunch of your life, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Well, it was funny. I was talking with my husband about it last night and he was like, why do you think people stand for that weather? You know, on the East Coast, he's like, I don't get it. And I said, you know, if you're on the East Coast, you don't know anything else. You're just kind of used to it. I mean, yeah, sure, you think about it being nice, but you get used to it. It's like anything else. You know,
and you
it's
have
like
the right gear, right? You've
yeah,
got the right
exactly.
shoes and the right
sure.
mittens and scarves and all that kind of fun
exactly.
stuff.
Well, and as a kid, it was kind of fun to have a snow day and play in the snow with your friends and be off of school. So there were some, I mean, as a kid. Maybe not as an adult, but as a kid, it was fun.
Yeah, wonderful. There was some sad news this morning. There was a Metrolink train that
I heard about
hit
that.
A truck, I guess. I was just listening to the news on the way over here.
In Oxnard, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, what was it, 8 years ago, the tragedy that happened in, was it Chatsworth, I think?
Oh, where similar?
The train, yeah. And I actually was on the train system the same day. Like, I had just missed that train.
That's frightening.
Yeah, it's frightening. I also had missed an Aeromexico airplane that was
going to go
down years and years ago, like maybe 30 years ago. I was at the gate and I said, I'm not getting on this plane.
What?
I'm not getting on the plane. And everybody was saying, why? I'm not getting on this plane. And then later on that day, I heard that it crashed. It was terrible.
I just got the biggest chills. So did you have a feeling?
Yes.
What was?
Yes.
Okay, so you had a feeling it was going to go down?
I didn't know if it was going to go down. There just something felt wrong about it, and I just simply refused to get on the plane.
Oh. Where were you? You're just going to vacation in Mexico?
Yeah.
This is incredible. I can't believe I never knew this.
Yeah.
Well, this is amazing. Wow.
A few of those semi-psychic moments.
Oh, my God. I need
to
hang with you more.
Someday.
Yeah. That's amazing. Incredible.
Well, here you are. Here I am. And we're in studio. So anytime you would like to call us, please give us a telephone call at 323-203-0815. Again, 323-203-0815. And you can always email us. We have lots of good emails today, but we do love your calls. So please don't be too shy. Even if you are shy, as they say, feel the fear and do it anyway.
Yes.
Just walk through it. Just walk through it. Yes.
And we won't bite, promise.
No. Last week, we talked about shame. You know, I actually listened to our show from last week, and I think we gave out some pretty good advice and information about how to deal with shame, because it's just can be so debilitating in our lives.
I found it really eye-opening. I mean, everything we talked about, I came home, I was discussing with my husband everything we had talked about. I mean, I had learned some really interesting facts from our last show as well. I think it's a topic, it's exactly what you had said. I think people are much more comfortable with embarrassment, and then shame is sort of that like question mark, like what is it? And I thought it was really interesting.
Yeah, I did too. Yes, I'm so happy in my life today that I have so little shame mm-hmm. or so little toxic shame. I'm certainly, yes. you know, when we really do something in a way that is hurtful to other people, sometimes I still feel ashamed. Like, oh, did I really say that? Did yeah. I really do that? Did that really emanate from me?
You sure, know? Exactly.
Thinking yourself as a reasonably good person. So
yeah.
do have those moments. And to some degree, that's healthy because it sure. does keep us humble. But I was sitting here before the show, and I don't have a tissue, and my nose is running. So historically, if I were in that position, I would have yeah. actually felt like my snot was shameful. You know, like, oh my goodness, this is so embarrassing. How could I even sit here in this studio with you if that's what's happening? But you know what? So I got a runny nose.
Exactly.
So be it.
And it doesn't bother me.
I can use my fleece, my sleeve.
Your sleeve.
Wait, I can't even say that.
Your
I can
fleece
use my
sleeve.
Sleeve. Say that 10 times.
Exactly.
There we go. I'll be a 3-year-old child.
It's like my kids. I'm used to it. Come on.
That's right.
It doesn't bother me at all.
That's what they say. Once you've had a child, there's very few bodily functions that ever cause you to have any... anything,
absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely. I once had to deal with my dog's poop. Like, I think my older son was vomiting, and then my younger son, like, had diarrhea. And I felt like I should have, like, a hazmat suit on. And, like, because I was cleaning up so much crap. It was horrible.
Oh, dear.
Yeah.
Literally so much crap.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. All right. Well, today
we're
going
to
launch into...
Sure.
We have a call?
Yes.
All righty.
Hi. You're on live with Dr. Deborah and Coach Kelly.
Hi, it's Brad.
Hi, Brad.
Hi, Brad.
Hey, your topic today is about criticism and dealing with criticism.
Yes.
And that was something I wanted to talk about with you guys. I've sort of dealt with what feels like a lifetime of criticism over the last 15 to 20 years in being married and parenting. And I feel like I can sometimes never do right in terms of what my wife would want me to do and in terms of being a parent. And I know that I'm doing all the things I need to do because I always hear from the rest of the community that I'm sort of a model parent, and I've been very involved and very lucky to be involved with my kids in their lives. And I guess my wife sort of resents hearing it from a lot of the other moms in particular that I'm this quote-unquote father of the year or whatever they want to say. And so I think she just has tended to be hypercritical over the years, and I sort of am having more and more difficulty in dealing with it and not responding to it, even though I know it's not very accurate. I just find myself now becoming more confrontational because I just want to say, look, you know, everyone's told you that I'm above and beyond in terms of being a dad, and your criticism is just so unfair.
Wow, that's a handful to deal with, isn't it? Mm. So
yeah.
as your wife historically been a critical person towards you, even from the get-go?
She has been very demanding, and she has very high expectations, and she's an amazing person and beloved herself by the community. But I think she's had to deal with a lifetime, at least in terms of our kids' lifetimes, of always hearing from everyone at schools and elsewhere that, you know, this is so amazing to have your husband always there for the kids. And I think my schedule is a little more flexible than hers, and so at times I think she feels a little resentful that I've been able to maybe spend more time with the kids or that I'm able to take on this role. And I think she deals with it by trying to in some way lessen me by saying what you're doing isn't all that you think you're doing.
I wonder if there's a competitive element to it, that somehow she feels like she's second place then to you, and that the world is judging her that way. Coach Kelly, what?
I was just going to say that, and I was thinking the same exact thing, and my thought was, if that is the case, and she probably won't admit to that, but what if on the weekends when her schedule frees up, if she had just a day with the kids, and then she can sort of feel that she's, you know, spending some quality time with them, and it's not as competitive because she's getting a little piece of that herself.
Yeah, I think it's a really astute observation by you guys in terms of the fact that it is very competitive. And I do encourage her to spend time with the kids, and she's been a great mom for them. But she feels if we aren't all together doing something, that that in some way diminishes our family as a whole. And so she often says that if I'm not going to participate, well, in some way I'm trying to detract from the family. And so it's very hard to get any downtime, because the expectation really is 24/7 involvement with the kids. And maybe we've spoiled them a bit, and now with the oldest a year away from going to college, hopefully he'll be able to deal with life on his own without this sort of constant attention. But it does make for a very high bar being set.
In her childhood experience, were people very demanding of her? Was that a bar that was set for her as well, and she's just carrying that forward?
Well, to some extent, I don't know that there was a ton of pressure put on her, but she is quite successful, and she's always done very well. And so I think she has certain expectations that sometimes can be hard to meet.
And I do think, Brad, that there is a difference between being passive and just accepting it versus being confrontational, that there's some place in the middle that might be a communication style to look toward in order to help this, by basically expressing that when you observe that she puts all these demands on you, that you tend to feel, and then state what it is that you feel, either scared or mm-hmm. sad or angry, and that you interpret that to be that she does not think that you're good enough. And if there's a way that the two of you could work on this so that it's a more relaxed and happier family dynamic, because it can't be fun to sit in the line of fire of somebody's constant, you know, degradation
exactly.
of all the stuff that you are doing and doing well, I'm sure.
Yeah, I tend to try to just not get disturbed by it, but I have found myself more recently getting sort of more agitated and just wanting to sort of, you know, have my Sally Field moment and just say, you like me, you know, you got to see what I'm all about. And I don't know, maybe not the best analogy, but I just have wanted some sort of affirmation from her as to what I've done all these years.
Sure.
Of course, that would make
sense.
Yeah,
have you had a discussion at all about this with her?
Oh, hours and weeks and conversation forever. But I think the feeling is that whatever issues there are my issues, and so it's not real easy to try to talk through these problems. I kind of find myself just waiting for the kids to grow up, and then perhaps this won't be as big an issue.
So the family system has become dominantly child-centered as opposed to couple-centered.
Completely child-centered.
Now that can be an issue, because when the kids are gone, what are you going to fill that up with?
That's definitely something that I'm sure privately we both think about, but it's something that we don't talk about, because I think we're worried that'll lead to some pretty difficult discussions.
Yeah, it's a tough situation. I was curious, too, is there a theme to the criticisms? Like, sometimes, even though people get focused on, oh, I'm always being criticized, but if you really hone in on it, there's maybe one common theme. And is there anything that you're doing that actually is co-creating her negative experience? Does that make sense, my question?
Yeah, I think it's just the competitive aspect of it, as you said. Mm-hmm. I think it's always in her mind, well, why didn't the kids come to me to look at this, or why didn't the kids ask me to participate with this? And this feeling that in some way I've set up this system in which the kids are always looking to me first, or which the parents are always writing me first when it's about something involving our kids. Mm-hmm. When in fact, I think with the parents, it's just them sort of being respectful of how busy my wife is. And with the kids, it just may be their proximity or their familiarity with me, especially on certain issues that I may be much more familiar with. But she always sees it as sort of a negative towards her.
Right.
And
and making it very personal.
I'm going to venture a guess here that actually behind the scenes is some shame or embarrassment that she has, because the traditional role for the female is that she's the dominant parent, right?
Yes.
She's the dominant caregiver for the children. And here it sounds like your relationship is a little bit more, a little less traditional in that way, and that you're actually the go-to mm-hmm. parent as opposed to her. So if she has any image issues, like how she's seen in the world, this could have less to do with the things that she's critical of and more to do with her inner experience.
Exactly.
That, uh-oh, I'm not fulfilling what I'm supposed to fulfill as a mom.
Yeah, I really think we equally contribute, and I always tell her that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think she lives in a community where a number of the moms, maybe because they're in very fortunate situations, have more time on their hands to be with the kids over the years than maybe she did, although she's been there all the time and is a great mom. But in terms of, you know, being on all the field trips and doing things like that, mm-hmm. I just always had a much more flexible schedule. And so it just created a lot of issues. It created issues with my relationships with the moms, and it just has led to a lot of hostility over the years.
I had a really interesting thought, and I want to hear what you think, Dr. Deborah, if you agree with this. But what if slowly you started to pay her compliments on, you know, and not making it so obvious where she's kind of like, but just, you know, subtle kind of comments. Oh, you know, I really liked how you parented, you know, this child this way, or, you know, it's really great when you do this. And I'm wondering if that could lead to her feeling a little bit more like she's doing a great job and sort of, you know, filling that self-esteem that it sounds like she's missing in that section. But I know that's probably really hard, because it sounds like you're getting, you know, there might be some resentment there. But I'm wondering if that could lead to her feeling a little bit better, and then in turn giving you less criticism.
Yeah, I think it's a great suggestion. I actually think if she could hear those kind of comments from other people, it would mean a lot more than hearing it from me.
Mm-hmm.
And I do try to say those sort of things, and I'm very mindful of that. But I still think there's this perception. I think she always talks about sort of feeling like she walks through our community with almost a mark on her chest, mm-hmm. that, oh, there's the mom who has this super dad who's always there all the time, and so that in some way diminishes her, and so she always feels that in some way I've created again this reputation or atmosphere around her that doesn't allow her to be seen as the person she really is, although as a professional she's as beloved and renowned in the community as you could ever imagine.
Mm-hmm.
So it's sort of an interesting dichotomy.
It's always a challenge in a relationship when one is not willing to look at their own responsibility and how an issue is created. And it sounds like she's pretty much one-sidedly looking at this as you're creating this,
right,
as opposed to her owning that she herself has this insecurity or has this shame hole or this embarrassment factor, this image issue, whatever you want to call mm-hmm. it. And so you're kind of tied. Your hands are tied, because if you approach it, she could feel blamed, right? And she doesn't want to see it that way. But if you don't approach it and you don't deal with it, then you're going to carry forward more and more resentment, which isn't going to be healthy in the relationship either. So trying to strike that balance of being able to communicate about it without it being too confrontational, possibly even seeking some couples therapy for just a couple sessions. Sometimes it's been my experience with couples, I can say something to one of the members of the couple mm-hmm. that the other one may have said 50 times
yes.
or 100 times, and the light bulb goes off
yeah.
because it feels like the agenda's different.
Right, and your objective. And
yeah,
it's, yeah,
right, or at least that's the illusion, right?
Sure, yeah.
So, you know, it might be worth that before the kids are grown up and gone, because you are going to have that empty nest
exactly.
syndrome experience, and without having some tools about how to fill up
sure.
that nest with the love and respect for one another, then, you know, the marriage could be fragmented.
Right.
So you definitely think it's worth focusing on and not just sort of letting it go until the kids go away because of the long-term ramifications and the way things might potentially be after the kids leave if we don't focus on it now.
That's
absolutely.
My opinion. Yeah, absolutely.
And then why go through that for another couple years? I mean, that sounds so painful. And it's like, you know, you might, at least this, if anything, this will lead to healthier communication. Who knows what's going to happen in the long run? But I think, you know, for the next couple of years, at least you can, you know, live a more peaceful life and not get criticized.
And we haven't said much about it yet today because we were just starting the topic, but oftentimes, people who are critical, it's because they're fear-based. There's fear beneath the criticism and judgment. They're like turning the mirror toward their partner instead of looking in the mirror themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And again, these are the kinds of things that a therapist might be able to point out in a loving and compassionate, empathetic way, where maybe she'd be able to hear it without feeling as threatened. Because after all, you're her competition, right? I mean, if we're
right.
accurate in that, then mm-hmm. you're the competitor, so she can't necessarily trust what your agenda is behind commenting on this with her.
Right. Yes.
I really want to thank you for your help. I was sort of skeptical of calling in, and you guys really sort of got to the core of the issue, and I can't thank you enough. I'm definitely going to take to heart what you said today.
Thank you so
Wonderful.
Much for calling, Brad.
So appreciate
thank you.
It. Thank you.
Okay.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye. Wow, wonderful caller.
Yeah, really interesting topic.
Great discussion, yeah. And you are listening to Dr. Deborah.
And Coach Kelly.
And so keep those calls coming in, 323-203-0815. Again, 323-203-0815. I wanted to tell you a little story. As I was thinking about this show today and this topic. I had a really interesting experience in my graduate school training, right? So during graduate school, as you're aware, you get internships so that you're actually on the job training,
sure.
right?
Yeah.
With real people in real time. But I was part of the Gestalt Therapy Institute, and it's a method of therapy that's kind of a combination of existentialism, humanistic, client-centered,
sure.
but, you know, mm-hmm. with lots of hands-on working tools, mm-hmm. you know, so it's very tool-oriented, you know, give people something that they can
walk away
chew,
with.
Yeah,
yeah.
That they could bite into and chew on that makes sense to them. Anyway, so this group, there are a group of characters, the trainers of this. I mean, literally, I was sitting one time in a group, and I was really young. I think it was 23. And we would have these training group sessions, uh-huh. right? Not with clients, but we'd have to pretend to be clients here uh-huh. and there, right, within the group. But I mean, some of these people, like one of the supervisors asked me to massage his feet while we were in this session.
No.
Got some crazy stuff in my
Talk about
body.
Hands-on.
Yes. But there was this one time where, you know, and you, it was kind of like the empty chair thing, but you were in the chair
yeah.
and you are being brutalized. I mean, literally everybody in the training group, talk about if you have shame issues,
wow.
not wanting to like run out of the room and cry. And so one of the trainers says to me, and this is related to the criticism, she says, yeah. wow, you are so critical of other people. And I started to cry, and I said, what do you mean critical of other people? I know yeah. I'm like the worst critic to myself.
Right.
But I'm not critical of anybody else. It was the weirdest mirror ever put in front of me. She says, if you're that critical of yourself, then you are that critical of everybody else. And until
wow.
you own that, until you figure that out, you're not going to be a good therapist.
Oh, my
I'm
gosh.
Like, oh, my gosh, this is awful.
Yeah. It's like, Do you think that's true, that if you're really critical of yourself, you're critical of others?
What I think I realized at that time was that the tendency to be critical of others was very uh-huh. high because that's how I was raised. I was
oh.
raised under such a critical eye mm-hmm. from, I would say, equally from both parents. Now, again, they were critical because, again, as immigrants, they wanted to feel like they fit in. So they were just trying to make everybody just so
Look
so
good.
That we would, you know, fit in and mm-hmm. be good and be right, you know, all those things. So, I think what was true is that the impulse, the reflexive action in my brain was to automatically assume the worst or to be critical of something. And I really had to pay attention to that. And then, mm-hmm. it really helped me open up my eyes
That's
about
great.
How critical I was of myself as well
mm-hmm.
and how destructive that was.
Yes.
And that I really couldn't. How could I put forth health and wellness in front of people if I was damaging myself so much?
Oh, I like that's really interesting.
But it stuck in my mind. It was one of those
yeah,
moments
like,
in time where
aha
I was like,
moments.
Whoa.
Yeah, exactly.
Whoa.
Yeah. But the reason I ask that, because I feel like I'm very critical of myself, and yet I don't feel like I'm so critical of others, and I'm actually so much more forgiving. So that's what I was going to say, but I wonder if they correlate all the time. I don't know.
Yeah, or, you know, maybe you just learned how to turn that all against yourself
yes.
so that you're not even aware of it. with other people. But
sure.
It, I mean, it's certainly criticism, you know, whether it's to ourselves or to others, can really have a negative component to our relationships. But, you know, where does criticism and judgment come from? As I shared with Brad on the caller, I mean, truly, it's usually fear-based. It's usually that there's something, you know, by the way, our brains are designed to be able to be judgmental. We have judgment of things all day long, right? We're judging whether when we turned up our mics, is it loud enough for us? Is it too loud? You know, somebody's judging the sound quality of the show when you're at a driveway and you're about to drive into the street. You look both ways and you judge whether the distance from the other car. So we're always being judgmental. That's not necessarily a bad thing. It's when it's turned against somebody in a way that's hostile and attacking, right?
Yes, that makes so much sense. Well, when you were describing it like with the mic, it was like, oh, that's an objective judgment, you know, but with people, it does not feel that way at all. It feels very personal. And yeah, so I can so see that.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, we're also programmed as humans to fear differences, because when there's a difference and we don't know whether that difference could translate into some sort of survival issue, like is this difference going to harm us or help us?
Okay.
So we get lower tolerance when we're more fear-based about whether a difference is going to turn into something that could be dangerous.
So can you give me an example? Okay, so let's say, you know, I'm dating somebody and he says something really critical of me. How is that fear-based? Is that, I don't know if this, you know, is his fear, I don't know if this mate is going to work for me, or?
Yeah, or is this mate safe for me, right?
Okay.
I mean, criticism is about, you're doing, so. Let's just take an example. Like, so somebody says to you, you know, I really don't like the way you, give me an idea. I'm at a loss here.
I don't like the way you drive.
I don't like the way you drive.
As a woman, we get this all the time.
Okay,
come on.
Right. Okay. So he doesn't like the way you drive. So, you know, if he's a passenger then, right? And what he's basically saying is, probably I'm afraid. Like I'm judging that the way you're driving is not going to be safe.
Okay. That makes sense.
Or I'm a speedy person and you drive too slow for my liking.
Yes.
Right? I mean, I think criticisms are a way that people are expressing something that they are uncomfortable with.
Yes.
But obviously, it's hard for people when they're under attack, when they fear that they're being under attack by somebody's critical eye, to be able to respond non-defensively. But if you look at it from that perspective, okay, so you're criticizing me, probably something about what I'm doing makes you uncomfortable.
Exactly.
So you don't really have to get defensive. Like I've learned, because I had several near-death car accidents when I was younger. And so I'm a little bit jumpy, and I like to be a passenger. I don't really like to drive all that much, because I have to drive a lot. So when Christopher and I are going someplace, I'm like, you want to drive? Fine.
Yeah.
That's awesome, right? But then he'll often see me on the edge of the seat. I'll go, don't do that. Don't do that. Don't do that. And then I have to say, and I have to stop myself and say, you know, it's not a criticism of your driving. You drive just fine.
Right.
However, because of my fear from post-traumatic stress from these other situations, it causes
anxiety.
So I just say, honey, the way you are driving is lovely. I'm getting anxious. Would you please slow down?
Oh,
or would
that's
you please
smart.
Be a little bit more, you know,
we used to go,
well, he'd say, well, just fine. I'll pull over and you drive.
Right.
Like, no, that's not the answer.
Exactly.
But of course, I wasn't saying it in the way that I'm saying it now, too.
And then he could hear it in a way that's, okay, she's uncomfortable. It's her issue and it's not me and I'm doing okay, and not take it so offensively.
Absolutely.
That's okay. So now what about women who are sort of catty with one another and they're critical? Is that a fear of the other person feeling either insecure or, you know, about their friend? Or what's that typically? So, like, I'll give you an example. So let's say I'm with a friend and she's like, you know, I don't love your eyebrows. They don't look so good. I'm making this up. But I'm just making this up. What is that? Like, in your mind, what is that? Is that person insecure with her own look, so she has to sort of point out somebody else's? Or is she fearful that that person's going to look so pretty that it's going to be a competition for her?
all of the above. Right? Yeah. I mean, that sings to me there could be some envy. Mm-hmm. She could just be a preferential style, so she just thinks that you would look better if you plucked them a different way.
Right.
You know, I mean, I would want to know more about what her agenda is, and yeah. I'd ask her such. I'd say, yes. Hey, that's curious that you feel the need to comment on my eyebrows. What's up with that?
Right.
You know,
exactly.
Is there a particular style that you favor and you right. think I should have that you actually think I would look better with that? I mean, there's uh-huh. lots of ways to play with that. I mean, the less defensive we get,
yes.
I think the better. And we just see that that's somebody else's issue at that moment.
Yeah.
You know, it's not necessarily exactly. your issue.
Sure. It's exactly. It's whatever. You could be fine with the eyebrows.
And it could also be that as many of us have been raised, again, under a microscope of yeah. somebody actually highlighting our faults and our mm-hmm. stuff all the time for whatever reasons, whether it came from an abusive agenda or whether it came from a hope for making you better agenda, yeah. regardless. I mean, if you grew up that way, they're probably going to have a higher likelihood of falling into that trap if you're not mindful yeah. and conscious of it. So, you know, exactly. judgmental people tend to breed judgmental people, et cetera, et
yeah,
cetera.
Sure.
Right? So, I mean, even that's kind of the root of all prejudice. I mean, what was always astonishing to me was that my father actually had a fair amount of prejudice. And given that he was persecuted literally by, you know, in the war as a uh-huh. Holocaust survivor, you would have thought that he was
yes.
much more uh-huh. Open-minded to differences and being much more mm-hmm. Embracing of that. But he was just so bombarded with all of that noise in his life that he would say really awful things sometimes really? About other people. But yet, he was such a sweetheart. Like, if he saw somebody who was crippled on the sidewalk, mm-hmm. I mean, his hands were in his pockets immediately trying to help them out, give them yeah. help, give them money, whatever
sure.
he could do. But he would say these just obnoxious things
about other people.
Right. So as yeah. a child, I would hear the obnoxious things, and uh-huh. sometimes it would be a little bit like brainwashing. Like
yes.
my brain would just go there, and I would go, I don't really think that.
Yeah.
I don't really feel that, but I have to combat some of those images and some of those impressions in
sure.
my head because that's the stuff I swallowed.
Yep.
You know, when you're kids, you swallow everything whole. You know, you don't know how to
exactly.
chew it up and say, that doesn't fit for me. I'm
sure.
not taking that on.
Everything feels like fact. Absolutely.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, that's what scares me about, you know, all the little kids in the Middle East. It's like they're getting that brainwashing about, you know, different countries. And it's so sad because you're exactly right. They don't know how to sort of throw out, you know, this isn't right or this doesn't feel right. It's just the normal. It's like the sun is shining and, you know, you should hate these people. Like, it's just become so normal, but it is sad.
Right.
It's really
and
sad.
Not knowing how to discriminate when you're younger
sure.
about what information of that is really valuable and helpful to your survival
exactly.
and what is just old noise just
exactly.
about hatred and just about all those
yeah.
oh, terrible things. Yeah. So if you just tuned in, you are listening to Dr. Deborah
and Coach Kelly.
And we love your calls and we love your emails. Our phone number is 323-203-0815. Again, 323-203-0815. How about we drop into, we got some good
yeah.
emails here. Why don't we go for one of these?
Sure. All right.
Okay. Dear Doc and Coach, my boss is overbearing at times, and I think she's on a power trip because she thinks she has to be tough in order to gain respect from her team. Since I'm below her in rank, I fear retaliation if I express my frustrations with how she comes across and talks to people. Should I just zip it or go for it? Signed, Fed Up at Work.
This is really interesting because I used to work at an advertising agency. I was a copywriter, and I had some really good ideas, and I remember saying to my boss at the time, hey, you know, I have some good ideas. I was thinking about maybe emailing the CEO my ideas.
Oops.
And he was like, you know, I probably wouldn't do that. He's like, you know, I mean, they look great. I'm in agreement with them. But, you know, you might not want to do that. And I was kind of new on the scene. You know, I was probably, what, like 20? You know, 24 or something like that. So I wasn't so familiar with sort of rank and kind of what you were supposed to do. And so I was like, okay, thank you so much. And I went back to my desk and was like, okay, screw that. And I just sent an email to her and some other people with my ideas. I was like, oh.
Wait, the CEO? You did?
It was a small company.
Okay,
so it
but
was,
you did. You
but I totally did
overrode
it.
What your I, boss
yeah,
told
I mean,
you.
I kind of took it as like a suggestion. Like, well, that's his suggestion. You know, okay, I'll think about it and take it or leave it. And I left
okay.
it. So I wrote to her and had my, you know, thought these were my, the best ideas ever and just needed to share with her. And 4 months later, I was laid off. It was very funny. or maybe even 3 months. It was pretty quick after that. I mean,
by
I don't think
that. By
the
CEO or by the person who had told you that you
I'm sure she
do it.
Made the executive decision. Uh-huh. But I don't know if it was specifically that, but it really taught me that it was like, you kind of need to respect the rules. And it was a really hard lesson for me because I'm sort of this like equal opportunity, like everybody has a voice and, you know, and suddenly it was like, okay, but my voice isn't as strong as like the CEO, you know, it was like, So, I mean, my advice to, unfortunately, to this writer is that sometimes I think you kind of have to zip it. And I mean, it's so hard. I mean, I think if she's doing something, you know, abusive or something that is, you know, harassment or any of that sort, then absolutely you speak up to HR. But I think if she's just, you know, just being overbearing, as you call it, I think unfortunately you have to zip it and you vent your frustrations to your best friends, you know, and, mm-hmm. and you leave the workplace stuff at work. Do you agree?
I do. I mean, in many ways, too, the workplace is not the place for somebody to do a psychological analysis of somebody's personality or why they're doing what they're doing and all that. Mm-hmm. But it's tempting, right? I mean, so already this writer is saying things like boss is overbearing. That's actually an assessment of some, right, that her his or her experience is that. I also, though, look for when there's only two alternatives, zip it or go for it, then I try to think of what's the third option. Is there a third option that might be a little bit of zipping, but a little bit of unleashing, but not to the level where there would be retaliation, because obviously that is not what somebody would, I mean, unless you don't care about job security, right?
Sure.
I mean, there's some jobs where, you know, in my book, Your Boss Is Not Your Mother, it's very important sometimes to define boundaries where this is just intolerable behavior. So as you said, I mean, if it borders on abusive or anything like that, I think you have to say something. You have to do something with HR or something. But clearly, once you address, again, oftentimes people who are overbearing, it's because they don't have much self-awareness. So you being the one to point out
The criticism
of them, right, is not probably going to go very well, is my guess. So I think there's a number of things to think about in terms of what's the risk, you know, how meaningful is the job, how overbearing is she, are you too sensitive also, and I don't mean too sensitive as a person, but in the workplace, you know, we need to sort of toughen up ourselves sometimes, you know. I mean, the workplace is the workplace, and we got to do a job, and some bosses we're going to like and some we're not. And, you know, maybe learning also not to personalize some of the overbearingness could be helpful as well.
Sure. That makes total sense to me. Yeah.
All right. Any more to say on that, Coach Kelly?
Yeah. I mean, it is, I think, you know, you hit it on the head when it's like, it's the workplace is not a time for like psychoanalysis as much as we want to do it. God, I mean, I could take everybody's inventory and sort of, you know, oh, look at this person, you know, but it's true. I 100% agree with you. I think that, and maybe there is a, you know, a way in between where she doesn't feel like she's, you know, not been able to say anything, but maybe, you know, there is a happy medium where she feels like she is able to say a little bit where, you know, she's empowered slightly, but yet, you know, her job still stays intact.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes also if you get a little bit more of a personal connection, I don't mean like becoming friends per se, but making it a little bit more personable, where maybe a one-on-one conversation or meeting where this employee actually says, hey, I'm really interested in some of your feedback about my work progress, what I'm doing, what I'm not. Because usually when there's an opening for somebody to give criticism, they're usually a little bit more thoughtful than about giving it
receiving
to them,
it
right?
Oh,
so maybe that some of the people on her team are not very open to hearing feedback, so she's actually having to be tougher than she would ordinarily. And you could be this fed up at work could be the one who goes and says, I'm really curious and interested in my work performance and what you think, and give me feedback. Right?
So open to that. Yep. That makes sense.
A little bit of reverse psychology there.
Exactly.
Possibly.
I love it.
You're listening to Dr. Deborah and
Coach Kelly.
Yep. And the number here is 323-203-0815. How about you read the next one?
Sure.
We're talking so we about got criticisms and judgments.
And we got this email. Dear Dr. Deborah and Coach Kelly, my boyfriend gets really pissed off at me if I say anything to him that makes him think I'm criticizing him. He's so damn defensive and sensitive. I know he had a very critical and judgmental mother, and he hasn't really made peace with his childhood, but I should be able to let him know when I don't like something he's doing. For instance, he's kind of a slob, and when I tell him I'd really like it if he picks up after himself when he's staying at my place. His reaction is to tell me 100 things that I do to irritate him. I think he's a pretty cool guy most of the time, but I'm getting tired of walking on eggshells. Any suggestions? Signed, Eggshell Walker. Sounds like a porn star name. Eggshell Walker.
Eggshell Walker. These eggshells were made for walking.
I feel like I have heard this so many times before. Haven't you? Like, I think this is a really common issue with couples. One of them feels like the other one is very sensitive, and then the other one feels like the other one is very defensive. So for me, I wonder if this is a two-part response. Like, in other words, I think they both maybe need some work on this, that, you know, he, in somehow or another, you know, there needs to be a talk with him about, okay, hey, you know, this is not a personal attack on you. This is not, you're a bad person. This is just, you know, a behavior which is hard for me to accept, and him sort of taking that in. And then her, you know, maybe just being a little bit kinder, knowing that he is a little bit more sensitive, and maybe saying it in a way that doesn't trigger him so much, and maybe finding out a little bit about his triggers. I mean, she could be saying it in a tone that kind of drives him berserk. So maybe it's a question of, you know, having a sit down. Is there a certain, you know, way that I could say it that maybe you're a little bit more open to hearing it?
I agree. Yeah, absolutely. Good suggestions. I'm also thinking of a couple of different things that stand out for me here. One of them is that common tit for tat experience. So I say something that you don't end up liking, so now you're going to barrage me with every single thing that you did not entitle yourself to ever say before until I opened my mouth, right?
Yep.
That deflection or that tit for tat. It's actually a very dangerous tool when couples use that in their relationship, because it really does make it unsafe for somebody, like the other emailer talking about retaliation. That's a retaliation within the relationship. It really damages the intimacy. One thing that I strongly encourage couples to do is practice a speaker-listener model, where you make time in your relationship on a weekly basis where one person is the speaker who gets to sort of say the things that are working for them in the relationship that week and the things that really aren't working for them, and doing both sides, right?
Wow.
It's not all negative, but a positive. And the listener's job is to actually just take this in, not personalize it, not defend, not do anything. It's like, oh, I hear you say that my hygiene style or my cleaning style in our home or in your home when I'm here is not up to your satisfaction. Mm-hmm. I'll take a look at that. I will pause for a minute and I will say, all right, maybe I could improve there or not.
Yeah.
But she would want to be very careful not to call him a slob, because that's a label. And most people take great offense to being labeled about things, especially when they perceive that the label has a negative connotation.
Yep.
You know, so I think just saying that it's her preference.
Yeah.
You know, it's, look, when we're here, it is my preference that we keep these things a certain way. Are you comfortable with that? If he says no, then you might have to make a decision not to spend so much time at your
place. Exactly.
Spend more time at his place.
Sure.
Or just accept that if this is who he is and he's not willing to change that area, if he's got enough good qualities, that then, all right, so you pick up after him a little bit more. There's nothing wrong in doing things to sort of compensate for other people's deficits, as long as you're doing it by choice.
Right, exactly. That makes sense. Like, if she's truly okay with it.
We also, it's always curious to me, these are always such relative, not always, these are often just relative terms, like a slob compared to what? Maybe she's a neat freak.
I was thinking that, like, what if she has OCD and cleanliness? Yeah. Yeah, it's hard sometimes with these emails, because you don't know the full extent.
Right.
And if you had the person in, you could ask the questions.
That's okay. We're making some pretty good guesses here. And there's, you know, it's rich with information for sure.
Yeah.
But also the other thing I wanted to say about defensiveness and sensitivity, it's also very common for many people to be very sensitive to criticism that they experience coming in their direction, but have no sensitivity to dishing it out to somebody else.
Of course.
You know? So
yes.
You can, it's just like, wow, how could you say that about me? But on the next breath, I'm saying 50 negative things about you.
Sure.
You know, so that always gets me a little bit concerned about narcissism.
Ooh.
So, because narcissists are some of the most very sensitive people and demand high expectations for other people to be considerate, empathetic, and understanding of their own feelings, but they don't offer it in return. at all.
Yes, right. You know? Right.
She may be encountering, I fear, a little bit of that, whereas, yes, I agree, in a relationship you should be able to speak up about the things that are working for you and the things that aren't working for you, as long as you're doing it, as you say, in a very loving and
kind way.
Proactive and positive style, right? What's the end result that you're after? Do you want to make somebody feel bad?
Right.
Or, like in our caller earlier, it sounds like the criticisms are to make him feel bad, to make herself feel better.
Yeah,
that's not a healthy roller coaster or teeter totter, right? But you want to,
but
if you're saying something because it's, and especially if you own it, look, this is my anxiety. When I come into my home and it's aesthetically displeasing to me, I get uncomfortable. So I know that you love me and I know that you would like me to be comfortable, and this is the part that you're playing in the discomfort. You know, then are you willing to, you know, put the dishes in the dishwasher or do this stuff so that we can change some of those habits to make our cohabiting more peaceful and better for both of us?
I think what's hard is as I'm listening to you, I'm like, gosh, that sounds so lovely. And the way you said it, it's like very like sweet and kind and gentle. And I think a lot of people don't have those models to go by. I mean, that's what kills me. It's like, I wish there were, I mean, maybe there's like vignettes or something online where you can sort of, you know, listen to healthy communication, because I think a lot of people just aren't familiar. It's like, you know, they didn't grow up with parents who talked like that. I mean, they grew up with parents who were like, you're a damn slob, you know, clean up. And it's like, so it's like a foreign language to them. It's like they have to learn this language, how to speak to people appropriately.
Absolutely. You know, I think it would be valuable, instead of doing another email, maybe we can give some tips to people right now,
either
as parents or as lovers or as children of their own parents.
Yeah.
How do we express our concerns to other people? I think for one, really try to stay away from labeling. Labeling somebody's behavior as an absolute, like, you're a liar. I encountered that with somebody today and saying, you know, the wife was really hard-pressed to get her husband to acknowledge that he had lied about something. But calling him a liar was not going to get her anywhere.
Yeah, exactly.
But saying, you know, in this situation is your tendency to fudge the truth or to say something that's less than completely candid because of fear, because of this. And so helping people by not pigeonholing them into a category helps people usually hear things better.
That makes sense. So. And I want to recycle what you had said about sort of thinking about the bigger picture. You know, what do you really want by when you're, you know, criticizing somebody? Do you want them to change their behavior? You're trying to make them feel bad. And I think ultimately you're trying to change their behavior, trying to work together as a team. So just really thinking about that long-term goal, and that maybe will allow you to have a little bit more sensitivity when you speak to them.
Absolutely. I think always, as often as possible, that we could be mindful and conscientious of what our intentions and our agenda is in our communication, the better chance we have of being effective.
Right.
Right? I mean, most of the time, most people, I think, talk it out. They say something out loud because they would like to be heard.
Sure.
You know, there are people who love to just talk to themselves. They could care less if anybody's listening. But for the most part, a lot of people, I in particular, when I'm saying something, I don't want to bother saying it if I'm not going to be received.
Exactly.
You know, so I want my communications to be as receivable as possible.
Sure.
You know, so
and I think
thoughtful.
Mirroring what the other person said can go such a long way. I mean, it's exactly what you had said. So somebody says, you know, hey, I really don't like it, you know, when you, when all of your stuff is in the bathroom. And, you know, so the other person says, okay, so what I'm hearing is that you really don't like it when my stuff is all over the bathroom. And that validation is so huge for the partner. Like, they suddenly feel like, okay, hold on. They're hearing you. They're getting it.
Yes.
And so they're, you know, suddenly you can kind of almost see that shift once you mirror, you know, what your partner has said.
Beautifully said. I couldn't agree more. It's just such an empowering and considerate tool to use, especially, again, if you're in a loving relationship and you want somebody to hear you. The other probably most important one that I can think of also is, be careful when you say things to people like, you need to.
Oh, yes.
Because generally you're articulating what your own need is. Oh. I would like you to, my preference, or I need this, as opposed to, because that's an immediate defensiveness trigger for
people.
You need to. Don't tell me that I need need to. This
exactly.
is your need.
It's
like I'm saying, like in the car when yep. I say I prefer that
yes.
you would slow down because I'm having mm-hmm. anxiety.
Sure.
Then that allows somebody to say, oh, because I love her, I'm going to do this for her.
Right.
But it's not that I'm doing something wrong.
Exactly. Yep. Sure. Well, I was going to say using the I versus you statements.
Of course.
And I feel, and you know, sometimes too, it's like if I get so angry, you know, it's like you want to just do everything, but sometimes I'm just say like I will say like I'm so angry right now, you know, because it's like again, it's about me. I'm so angry, and I'm not pointing any fingers, and it's a little bit healthier.
Yeah, I'm so angry, and I need to calm down.
Yes.
It's not that, and you need to stop
exactly.
doing, but
sure.
I need to do
exactly.
what I need to do to self-regulate, yep. which is really important.
Sure.
Wow. Okay. Well, we didn't get to our other emails, but that's okay because we can
get
carry
to them next
those
week.
Over next week, and hopefully we'll get some more. And we do love your emails, even though we also love your phone calls. So thank you for those who do call in, and thank you for those who write to us. So next week, please send those emails. One of the emails sort of triggered this today
yes.
about workplace woes,
Ooh.
Common workplace issues, bosses, coworkers, but again, all relationships, anything
yeah.
on your mind, whatever
sure.
you would like to write to us about or call in about, we are open. All ears.
Sure. We'll promote your website real fast before
yes,
we...
Yes, and you too. So you can find me at www.drdebraonline.com, drdebraonline.com. I've got lots of books and articles, and I'm blogging. I love blogging.
I love it.
Yeah. Okay, and Kelly?
Sure. My book is Professor Kelly's Guide to Finding a Husband on Amazon, and my website is www.kellymiller.com, K-E-L-L-I, Miller, M-I-L-L-E-R.com. That's it.
So have a beautiful week. See
thanks
you next
so much.
Time.
Bye-bye.
You're listening to the Dr. Debra and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.